Hello, and welcome to This Week I Learned, your audio guide to the most surprising discoveries and fascinating studies of the week. I'm your host, Lauren Hansen. This week I learned that plants can have conditioned responses just like dogs. Perhaps you've heard of Pavlov's dog. This is the famous early 20th century Russian physiologist Ivan Pavlov that proved that behavior could be changed using conditioning. With Pavlov, the subject was a dog, who Pavlov found salivated automatically every time he ate. Pavlov then introduced a bell, which at first was neutral. There was no drooling from the dog. But then every time Pavlov fed the dog, he rang a bell. And soon enough, the dog learned to associate the bell with food. And when Pavlov rang the bell without even feeding the dog would drool. This associative behavior modification is replicated throughout the animal kingdom. But researchers wanted to find out if this learned associative behavior modification was also evident in the plant world. In this new collaborative study from the universities of Oxford and Zurich, researchers experimented with pea seedlings. Researchers placed the plant seedlings in a Y-shaped maze, basically two tubes that connected at one end. Now, plants need light to survive. It's their food. So when light was shown down one tube or the other, the seedlings would grow into that tube that had the light. But for this study, researchers introduced a Pavlovian bell, so to speak. In this case, a fan. The seedlings were split into two groups. In one group, exposure to the light and the fan was in the same tube. In the other group, the light was in one tube and the fan in the other. So basically, one group of seedlings was learning negative associations with the fan. They wanted to go away from the fan to find the light. And the other group was learning positive associations with the fan. They wanted to go toward the fan to find the light. Researchers kept this up over a 3-day training period, and then they tested the seedlings. First, they split up the seedlings so they could have a control group. For the control group, they eliminated the fan, but they switched the light. And the control group did exactly as they thought. The seedlings continued to crawl up the tube that originally had the light. In the test groups that had the fan, what was interesting is that the seedlings, instead of crawling up the tube that last had the light, the seeds responded to the fan, even though it was in the opposite tube. Which proves, just like Pavlov's dog, that a plant's behavior can be changed using conditioning. This week I learned that African elephants are increasingly born without tusks because of ivory poaching. For decades, elephants with the best and largest tusks have been targeted for the ivory trade, which has been banned in most countries since the 1980s, but still unfortunately persists. Elephant tusks are actually teeth. They are elongated incisors that never stop growing. An entire third of the tusk is embedded deep in the elephant's head. But the elephant tusk is different from other tusks, which can be found on warthogs and other mammals. It has these crisscross lines that form a series of diamond shapes that make it particularly coveted. Previous studies have shown that the size of the elephant tusks have decreased over time. A century ago, elephants could grow tusks that could weigh up to 200 pounds. But because those tusks were especially targeted by poachers, the gene that helped create them died with those elephants. Today, tusks are roughly half the size, around 100 pounds. But now, researchers are finding that elephants aren't growing tusks at all. In the past, just 2 to 6% of female African elephants would be born without tusks. Today, in some areas, that number has skyrocketed to 98%. In Mozambique, during the country's civil war in the 70s and 80s, 90% of the elephants were slaughtered by poachers who wanted their ivory. The elephants that survived were the ones that didn't have tusks, which means that the female passed that tuskless gene on to their offspring. Poaching may be under control in Mozambique, but 30% of female elephants born since the end of the war don't have tusks. So poaching seems to have fundamentally changed the gene pool of these African elephants. While that could be a good thing, an adaptive measure for the elephant so that the species can survive, the elephants may find they struggle in other ways, because of course tusks evolved as tools for elephants. They use them for digging, for self-defense, and for sexual display. This week I learned that pulling an all-nighter can be a temporary fix for depression. Of course, this isn't one I'm recommending, mind you, but the science is interesting. A 2005 study on mice found that antidepressants alter a specific receptor in the brain's frontal lobe. And interestingly, sleep deprivation also alters that very same receptor, which influences the signals in the brain related to mood regulation. This is actually something that scientists had figured out more than 150 years ago. Back then, German scientists developed a treatment to lift depression that worked by manipulating the body's natural rhythms. The treatment was called chronotherapy, and with some modifications, it's actually still used today in Europe. The problem with this kind of wake therapy, of course, is that it's not recommended for prolonged use, since you need sleep to stay healthy and relatively sane. But scientists are experimenting with a new iteration of it they're calling chronotherapy light. In the study, patients stay up for one full night, and the next night they go to bed extremely early, and from there their bedtime gets progressively pushed back until they find a sweet spot. The slight sleep deprivation is also paired with 30 minutes spent each morning in front of a full spectrum light box. The study is still ongoing, but the researchers have found some successes. Those who stuck with their new sleep schedule plus the light box have reported no depression symptoms for more than 7 months without medication. This week I learned that the music you're listening to on your iPhone isn't as joyous as it should be. A new study by audio engineers found that the compression required to convert studio-recorded music into downloadable MP3s strips the music of those warmer, happier tones. Musical instruments have distinct emotional characteristics, which is referred to as timbre. Those layers of sound have to be compressed to form a common digital musical file, which strips the song of its depth. For example, a CD-quality music file takes up to as much as 10 times the amount of space as a typical MP3. To make those files more manageable, they're stripped of their extraneous data. Researchers for this study wanted to find out the effect that stripping had on the end result. So they asked 20 grad students to listen to one song on different music files that ranged from having no compression to some compression to a lot of compression. The files featured 8 instrumental sounds: bassoon, clarinet, flute, horn, oboe, saxophone, trumpet, and violin. Then the participants had to rate each file of the same song for emotional characteristics, from the positive, like happy, heroic, romantic, to the negative, like mysterious, angry, and sad. At the end of the study, there were very clear winners and losers. The more compressed the song, the fewer positive ratings and the more negative ratings it received. And interestingly, particular instruments were also more affected by compression. Trumpets, for example, were the most altered. Researchers found that compressed files weakened positive emotional characteristics in musical instrument sounds while strengthening neutral and negative emotional characteristics. So if you're looking for more joy in your music, pop in that CD you've been holding onto, invest in a high-res music player, or go back to the warm sounds of vinyl. And that does it for this week's episode of This Week I Learned. Look out for new episodes every Friday on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. For more series from the week, including 7-Minute Opinions and 7-Minute Explainers, go to theweek.com/podcasts. And if you like what you hear, subscribe, tell a friend, or kindly give us a rating or review on iTunes. I'm Lauren Hansen, and thank you so much for listening.